Welcome to Reconstructed Faith, a podcast where we talk about truth you can build your life on. We hope to dive into the hard conversations of life and faith and seek out reasonable, substantive answers. My name is Colson Lechner, and I'm joined by Chris Legg and Bryn Starnes. This is Reconstructed Faith. Welcome back to the Reconstructed Faith podcast. My name is Colson Lechner, joined as always by my partners in crime, Bryn Starnes and Chris Legg. Bryn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Just, with you in spirit, not in person once again.
Okay, but we do actually have a listener question today.
We do have a listener
question. And it's a fun one.
Okay, so this is from Jordan Sherrod.
Okay.
Who's a member of our church. He's very thoughtful. He teaches at our church every now and then. He's on our leadership board. I'm just trying to think of somebody who's not familiar with our church.
Yeah.
And he asked this. This was in light of the Shroud of Turin episode. He says, something I've always thought about is what would be the impact of us knowing exactly what Jesus physically looked like. Did God intentionally come down at a time and place before photography because he knew we couldn't handle what the image of him would look like? There was a sermon I heard once that implied that the story of Zacchaeus described Jesus as the short, bald man, not Zacchaeus. Well, I didn't exactly agree with their conclusion from reading the text. It certainly was shocking to think about Jesus as short and how that challenged my internal picture of him in a good, deconstructive, reconstructive way. So that was his question. And I think the whole challenging internal narratives and internal understandings of things that we just assume, kind of assumptions.
Yeah.
That those are, whether you call them a, what's the, like a paradigm?
Yes.
And good. So things that can kind of shift your paradigm. You know, if you're a fan of the Bible Project, I feel like they talk a lot about those things.
Right.
Paradigm shifting things can be uncomfortable, especially when they relate to something so personal as your relationship to Jesus and things that you've been, you know, subconsciously building since you were a child. If you grew up in a, you know, well, really, really in at any point in life, I know I'm not trying to say, well, if you didn't grow up in a Christian home, you can't understand it. I didn't mean to imply that, but I just think there are paradigm shifting things like, you know, if you grow up thinking about heaven and I'm going to go to heaven and these specific things, and then you're reading about like, oh, well,
sit on a cloud and play a harp.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you fabricate these things in your brain. And then as you get older, then you learn like that might actually not be the case. And what does the Bible actually say about that? And when that goes against those internal things, that can be kind of like, that can kind of be shaking and at different levels. And so let me throw it over to you, Chris. And we can kind of kick this around a little bit.
Do we want to start with the general picture, or do we want to answer the Zacchaeus one first, just for context?
Like, I think it's good for us to answer the general first.
Okay, because we got a lot to cover there.
Yeah.
The Zacchaeus one will be not as difficult.
So if you want to hear Chris talk about the Zacchaeus, stay tuned.
Stay tuned for the rest of the episode.
That's right.
That's right. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, it's interesting because in a technical sense, in a direct sense, there is, I think it's agreed upon, not a single physical descriptor of Jesus in the Bible. That's kind of generally understood, unless the Zacchaeus one, which we'll come back to. But let's look real quick just for the closest thing we have. And so each of you guys might can look up if you got a Bible handy. Let's get one of you guys grab Isaiah 52, 14. Bryn, you might grab that one. And then Colson, Isaiah 53, 2. These are kind of the two references, that we get that. So, okay, let's hear about those, hear those two to start. These are both prophetic statements, presumably about the Messiah, about Jesus. So take it away.
Okay. Isaiah 52:14.
I think that's right.
As many were astonished at you, his appearance was so marred beyond human. Wait. Is that right? Did you say Isaiah 52:14?
I did say Isaiah 52:14.
Well,
I think that's talking about the crucifixion though, right?
Yes. Yeah. 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 This is probably
many were astonished. Sorry. As many were astonished at you, his appearance was so marred beyond human semblance and his form beyond that of the children of mankind.
Okay. So this is referencing when he is pierced for our transgressions, when he is lifted up before men. But it is technically a physical description, even though there was a moment at which he was so abused that he would not have been almost not recognizably human.
Wow.
Okay. So and there you go. And then you have the other one. That's actually, this is the most famous one.
It says, for he grew up before him like a young plant and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him and no beauty that we should desire him.
Okay. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that is
that's
complete.
It.
And those are both prophetic and must be therefore presumed, I think accurately, to be about Jesus. Now, it is interesting that the second one does reference the fact that there was nothing, the implication is there was nothing so strikingly beautiful about him that people would follow him purely for his attractiveness. And so that's it. So unless the Zacchaeus one does describe him, we can look at him. So then the question becomes, you know, one of the questions is, why do we then have all these paintings and creations of him? And why does he look the way he does in those? And when we have some of that. And so what are, you know, like maybe with some of the things we want to discuss is what are some of the dangers of, like Jordan was asking, like, does it make sense that God would before photography? So what do y'all see as some of the risks of, if we did have a clear photo of Jesus, a nice little photo or some video footage or something like that, what would be the consequences?
Well, my first thought is it's so interesting that this is so human, but almost every portrayal of Jesus, he's not, I mean, there are some that are like more like typically very attractive people, but some are more normal looking, but still none of them are like, I don't remember any movie or show that's portrayed Jesus as like not appealing. Does that make sense? And that's such a human thing. It's like, we can't help, but make him at least semi-attractive. Like he can't be just, you know, which is interesting as a first thought.
Yeah.
But I think we are so obsessed.
Is Willem Dafoe good looking?
Oh, I may not know every.
and again, I mean that like I don't know that I'm a good judge of.
He's the Green Goblin.
He was the Green Goblin in Spider-Man.
Did he play Jesus?
The Last Temptation.
Oh, I mean, I'm gonna have to look up a picture of him. Was he younger?
It was in 1988. Yeah,
I don't think so.
He's not your type, huh? But I think, but I don't know that you would say he was like unattractive.
He didn't look like the Green Goblin at the time.
No. There's a famous picture of him that several famous pictures from the movie, and I'm looking at them now, and they definitely are. They're emphasizing his looks. So
I mean, he still has like more chiseled face and like blue eyes and stuff, right?
Yes.
Yeah, see, that. He's, I mean, that's very, still, very even European. If you don't find him, yeah. But I think, so that's my initial thought is we're so obsessed with appearance as humans that I don't know, I mean, we'll never, at least until heaven, we don't know if God did it intentionally, but I think it was wise regardless, because we can't help but be obsessed with physical aspects of people, especially if they're in leadership or if we're following them.
Yeah.
And so I've even heard influencers who are Christian on social media who say that their followers comment on the parts of their physical being that's like not just right, which is so crazy to me. But we're that obsessed with it. When we're following people, we want everything to be just a certain way, to the point where we're like, hey, have you gotten your teeth fixed? And it's like, wow, who are you? Like, what?
Why are you asking me that? Yeah.
Right. But there are people, you know, I'm hesitant to say there have been studies shown, but, yeah. but I definitely know that that's like people, I remember like talking about, I think it was during like near the end of college, talking about like job, what am I trying to say? Like a job interview or something, and how people who have just a better smile or better looks
right.
often get, if you're kind of comparing a couple of things, it's like, it's easy because we are visual people.
Right.
And mm-hmm. especially in the United States. I mean, I think all humans are visual and have, you know, that bent
right.
toward, you know, your attraction or beauty, you know, sex
and
appeal.
I'm not saying that's bad.
Oh, yeah.
God created beauty himself, but I'm just saying, I think it's best that we don't know, because whatever yeah. the physical traits of Jesus would be, I think we would obsess over them in some way, whether it was like, oh, he was so beautiful, or oh, he was mm-hmm. not beautiful. Like we would have, whatever it is, we would hyperfixate on it because.
Yeah. And I also think so just like, you know, just like we like to, be exclusive. I think mm-hmm. there, you know, the minute you introduce some sort of, well, this is what the deity as a human fully, you know, the God man, this is what he looked like. And so any sort of, relatability to that, I think could have created kind of marginalization, but also just kind of like, I mean, you already have people of royalty and things right. like, hey, I am separate. I am, you know, I am another level. And right. so any sort of like, oh, well, you look like this. I'm sure there's just a ton of othering yes. that could have happened. And then think of all the, you, I mean, we were talking briefly before, but about, genocides and things that were done in the name of a false understanding of what
yes.
was the ideal.
Yeah.
And so if you were to have something that was like, well, this is what he looked like, what could yes. that have done as well?
It's a, I mean, the amount of error and even evil that has been taught, like in the name of Adam and Eve's ethnicity or the ethnicity of their children or, and I remember, I mean, I it's wild to me that there was a day and we still present Adam and Eve as though they are European. I mean, mm-hmm. they are tall, white, pretty, attractive people. And so it's, we don't know what they look like. You have the, I mean, they're either like William Lane Craig, they were two humans 700,000 years ago, hunched over, you know, not quite dragging their knuckles, covered with fur, or they were at minimum, they are African or Middle Easterner. And so, and from a long time ago. And so the idea that the European, because the Western world is where a lot of art came from, a lot of modern art, a lot of the ancient art that we still have. And so they're portrayed as Europeans from that era. And we don't know what they look like, but that is statistically almost, I would say that's the least likely of all your options, probably mm-hmm. is that, you know, tall, light haired, light skinned. I just think that's, I don't know that anyone would ever posit that. And yet that's to portray it any other way seems somehow offensive to some people. And I think the same thing is true with Jesus. I mean, I've talked about being down in the church in the Nativity, down in the cave down there where they have all these ancient medieval paintings of the baby Jesus, and he is white and rosy-cheeked and redheaded in every one of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what he looked like, but I think that's unlikely.
And also consider, I'm just thinking about also like how people worship spots.
Yeah.
Or things like that. Like you have this image then of
Jesus in a certain location.
Yeah, or just Jesus himself. And it's like, then you start to worship the image.
Oh, for sure. That's
the versus yes. the creator.
That's a huge concern. I think it's wild that we know so little about the physical appearance of almost everyone in the Bible.
Yeah.
I just was teaching the students about some of the middle schoolers last night about Ruth and Boaz. We were discussing their story. And anytime I ask the question, why did Boaz ask about the woman who was in the field? You know, who is this woman in the field? Why did he ask about her? Well, everyone says, cause she was good looking. Well, I don't doubt that, but we don't have any, there's no description of it, but they're always portrayed because their character is so beautiful because we so admire them. Mm-hmm. It somehow feels weird or wrong to portray them as not physically being pleasing in the same way that morally and character wise they're pleasing. But of mm-hmm. course that's no, That's we all know in our own lives how ridiculous that is, and yet it is still our, it is still a kind of a, I don't know if the flaw is the right word, but it's at least a some kind of
misconception
glitch
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. That we,
interesting,
that it feels, it would feel weird to portray Jesus as just this, mm-hmm, you know, horrifying person.
Or just, yeah, like balding, like, yeah, like a Danny DeVito type.
Yeah, and exactly. Like,
why does that bug me?
And, yeah, exactly. There's no reason for it to. Right. Yeah,
right.
That's really intriguing.
I'm just thinking when I hear this Zacchaeus thought, I'm like,
yeah,
that.
You think Danny DeVito?
Yeah. That's a great, oh, yeah, look at who Danny DeVito is.
No, I'm not. I know who Danny DeVito is.
Sorry.
I was like, yeah.
Anyway.
Anyone who can play the penguin.
I was looking up a Bible verse, Chris.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. No, I was looking up, I'm trying to see if this fits, but the verse that popped into my head was in Romans about worship and serve the things that God created instead of the creator himself.
Mm. Yes.
In Romans 1. That's what it makes me think of we, yeah, yes, God created beauty. He created humans. He created attractiveness, sexuality, like all those things. But like anything else that's a good gift from God, we end up worshiping it. And, yeah, so, like you're saying, maybe it was a protection that
it, yeah,
we get to worship who Jesus is, not what he looks like his image.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe y'all said this a second ago and I'm kind of catching up, but I think even the idea of the Jesus is like, I'm like Jesus or Jesus is like me club would be,
yeah,
it's already so devastating without us knowing the temptation, mm-hmm, of people.
Right. With just making it up.
Yeah. We totally invent what he looks like. And then we say he looks like us. It's the old, you know, we create God in our image temptation. Yeah. But, you know, if we knew what color eyes Jesus actually had, how hard would it be even now, much less 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, 1,800 years ago, for people not to go? So that must be the best color of eyes because that's the color he had. Mm-hmm. And so, or pick it, pick any feature.
Right.
Right. I mean, we already do it sometimes with the fact that he's, for example, male, yeah, like that there's some tendency to go, oh, that must be then be the better of the two, yeah, sexes because he was male. And,
mm-hmm, and how much was done in the name of,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. In the name of that. And, mm-hmm, so what an easy error it is with what little we do know. It's, and what even so much of what we don't know, we've turned that into a way to restrict or abuse his gospel when that's clearly not the point of his gospel. So anyway, the humanity of Jesus here is obviously pretty important for our theology, yeah, and yet, you know, it can be a little much.
Absolutely. So that's the general side of things. Is, yeah, there any more to that?
Did you want to comment, Bryn, on the, I thought you had, your girls had a great question.
Yeah. From, I think that's,
yeah, yeah, I think before it's worth we jump mentioning.
In. Yeah. I teach, I'll keep it general for their sake in case they're embarrassed. I teach some of the high school girls at church and we were talking about the life of Jesus going through the book of John and they ask the question. They were like, can I ask this question? I was like, whatever. First of all, in my class, yes, yeah, whatever, exactly, it is. Yeah, you can ask. But they were like, do you think Jesus had crushes on people? And more importantly, do you think women had crushes on Jesus? Because, like, if there was ever a man to have a crush on, and I just, like, started laughing. I was like, this is a great question. Don't be embarrassed. But it was just funny. They were like, can you imagine, like, Jesus being around? And you're like, really? This guy's got it all.
Yes.
But then we talked about the verses of, like, well, we talked about the, they were like, well, it does say, you know, there's no beauty or majesty to, mm-hmm, draw us to him. And then one of my co-leaders was like, but how many of you have known someone you didn't find attractive, and then the more you know their character, the more attractive they become? And we were all like, yes, we've all known, yeah, those people, sure, because, which is the best way for that to go, you know?
Yeah.
It's much better, sure, than finding someone attractive and then spending time with them being like, oh. But I thought it was really interesting because it goes back to the conversation that we've talked a lot about of Jesus was a real person, yeah, and in a real place and time. And sometimes that goes one of two ways. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if we really, I feel like that we're getting better about it, but the church has kind of ignored that for a long time because it feels uncomfortable. Like Chris, you've said before, like the fact that Jesus had to use the restroom, we're like, oh, that feels sacrilegious somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think one of the things that has been happening with things like the Chosen, who are not in a sacrilegious way, but adding back the reminder that Jesus lived a human life, he went to parties to celebrate mm-hmm. people's weddings, and he played games, probably made jokes. As much as that's uncomfortable to us, it's also so crucial to our relationship with him. When we view him as a God that is far off, who is not who the Bible portrays him to be, somehow we keep him at arm's distance. And I think it's hard for us to believe the verses like Jesus was tempted in every way that we are yet without sin.
Hebrews 4:15.
Thank you. I was about to.
I don't know if you had the reference in front of you, but I just looked it up a second ago.
Yeah, that's perfect. I meant to look it up because I had forgotten where it was. But I think sometimes it's hard for us to believe that, but I think it's so crucial for that aspect of our faith of this is the God who's come down to earth to live life, to be tempted as we are yet without sin, who can relate to what we've experienced, who walked and got dirty and sweaty. And as uncomfortable as that is, I think that's really important to us in understanding and communing with Jesus. What are y'all's thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I love that question. I mm-hmm. love that they asked it. And they're in good company. One of my very favorite musician, Rich Mullins, one of my favorite songs of his, not necessarily musically, although it's cute musically, but more the lyrics, is called Boy Like Me, Man Like You. And one of the lines in the middle says, well, did you grow up hungry? Did you grow up fast? Did the little girls giggle when you walked past? Did you wonder what it was that made them laugh? And did they tell you stories about the saints of old, stories about their faith? They say stories like that make a boy grow bold, and stories like that make a man walk straight. And the whole song is him just saying something about himself and then something about Jesus. I was born in Reed Memorial. You were born you were born in a stable. Like, and just, it's just this relation, like we can all connect to him. And I think I love that question. Did the little girls giggle when you walked past like they did when I walked past? And I didn't know why. Were they laughing at me or were they laughing with me or did they think I was cute or did they think I was hideous? And all little boys wonder that, like, why are the little girls giggling every time I walk past? And they did it with all the boys. Why are they giggling? And I love the idea of a 12-year-old Jesus going like, oh, girls are so scary. Like, mm-hmm. I just think that's, and I think he probably did. I don't know that, mm-hmm. but I think probably whatever his culture's version of that is, mm-hmm. he probably did, because he grew up as a real live little boy, and he went through being a little boy, and he went mm-hmm. through being a young man, and he went through puberty, and he went through all those. And so all the temptations, I think he had to experience life as a real human. Mm-hmm. And I love the question, did he have crushes? My assumption is yes. Now, I don't mm-hmm. know that. Maybe by age 12, that's what we know, is that he knows who he is. He's about his father's business in the temple. And maybe he was focused enough to not be drawn in at that age towards romantic questions. But that would seem really weird. That would seem strange. And I don't like the idea that he wasn't. You know, that he didn't have crushes, and yeah. the girls didn't ever have crushes on him. Someone probably did. And
I mean, if you're doing life with someone who's perfect and they're like, you're traveling together, you're having these like crazy emotional experiences together. Like,
don't you assume most of the women who traveled with him were at least drawn to him?
Oh, I mean, yeah. In what way, you'll never know. But yeah. Age.
Yeah. But that's not, and that again, that's a good, what that shows us and helps us understand is to remember that's not evil. That's a God thing. God mm-hmm. gives us those interests and those attractions. And the question isn't how do we feel and you know, what do we think about it to that degree, but it's what we choose to do with our thoughts or our actions. That is, because he was not flawless, but he was sinless. So it's just, I think it's a beautiful picture of it, of the reality of his humanity. Would be a little boy who's, you know, a young man who's like, oh my gosh, so-and-so is so cute. Like, I don't think that's weird or wrong, and it's certainly not sinful. So mm-hmm. did he? I don't know. But
it well, and I think to some degree, and like you're saying, crushes aren't, we're not saying those are wrong, but I think
right.
there's a level of this where we don't, like I said, we don't believe fully that Jesus actually experienced temptation like we do. We're like,
right.
Jesus would never be sexually tempted by someone. Like, that feels so sacrilegious. But it's like, well, that is one of the main temptations that Christians struggle with, right. One of the main downfalls, like we've talked about. And so it's like, if it says he struggled in every way, that obviously has to be one of them and was without sin. But I think it gives us kind of a buy where we kind of justify our own, where it's like, well, Jesus obviously, you know, he didn't experience what I've experienced because we still kind of separate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would, if we found out someday that Jesus came out of a house one day and looked down the hill and saw a woman bathing on the roof of her house, just like King David did, that would not be strange. That would not be evil. That would not be. But then what he chose to do was not what King David did, is that he would then have turned and walked away and like been respectful of her and her privacy and not lusted after her. Like, and so I think the idea that he would, was he ever tempted by that? It would seem really strange to me if at some version he wasn't. I agree. Yeah. Like, I don't think you can honestly say he was tempted in all ways if there's not at least a general heading of at some point this was a temptation to him. And maybe daily, maybe week after week. I mean, maybe there was sexual tension there the whole time. That was when the last temptation of Christ came out, people really got mad about it. And there were things that were stupid and inappropriate in it. But the thing people got mad about was Jesus is on the cross, and Willem Dafoe, as Jesus is on the cross, and on the cross, he then fantasizes out one of his other life choices, which would have been to marry Mary Magdalene. And there's a honeymoon scene, and I never saw the movie, so I don't know if it was graphic. I don't think it was, but there was a honeymoon scene, like we're there together in bed, and people freaked out about this. And I was like, I don't understand what you're freaking out about. I have to think he probably thought about that. Like, listen, I'm God. I get to do what I want. What if I want to live a normal human life? Surely he was tempted by that at some point and chose not to because he was going to obey the Father and he loved us more than he wanted any of those things. Mm-hmm. So I've never watched the movie. There may be 1,000 other reasons to hate the movie and say it was inappropriate, but I knew that was one of the main issues back then at the time. And I remember thinking, y'all don't think he thought about that stuff? Like, I think he really was human.
Satan tempted him. When Satan comes to the desert and tempts him, he tempts him with like, what if you lived these other realities on earth, basically?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he doesn't, that's not one of them and that's listed, but that's what he's doing. He's basically saying, what if you didn't follow God's plan and you did these other things instead?
Right. Yeah. I can protect you from the consequences of God's plan.
Yeah.
And yet you can still kind of have some of the same stuff. It'll just be under my authority rather than the Father's. And again, boy, there's so much we could unwrap there forever as to the consequences of all of that. But he was truly tempted. And I think that's really beautiful.
And I think of like, okay, in my experience and in other experiences that I know of like people dealing with sin, especially that like with relationships or with porn or with lust or with those types of things, how many small decisions were made to lead to a certain spot?
Yes.
So little sinful decisions of like, I'm just going to justify this here.
This much. Yeah.
And just so it's like, how many of those little things that I lead myself into disobedience versus God being man,
right?
Living a sinless life. It's like, all right, he is making those decisions ahead of time. So he's like, well, I'm not going to go and be with that person in there because I know that
I'm not taking step 32.
Exactly.
Because 31 may be okay, but 32 is sinful, even though it's not till 100 that anyone would know, I say.
Exactly. And so he's making that decision.
Early decision, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Man, if we could do that better, that'd be huge.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to comment on Zacchaeus now?
I do.
Here we go. Luke 19. And here's what's cool. I want you guys to notice this is a great study in Bible interpretation. In the Greek, it is unclear who is being described. Okay. So listen to how the English translation handles this, because the English translation in the ESV, at least, very carefully also protects the lack of clarity. Now we all assume a certain thing, but listen, He entered Jericho and was passing through, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich, and he was seeking to see Jesus, to see who Jesus was. But on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up to a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. So, ready, you can go this way. Zacchaeus was seeking to see who Jesus was on account of the crowd. Zacchaeus could not, because Jesus was small in stature. That works. The pronouns are unclear. It could work that way. So he, Zacchaeus, ran on ahead and climbed up to a sycamore tree to see him, Jesus, for him, he, Jesus, was about to pass that way. So those pronouns, half of them are Jesus, half of them are Zacchaeus. And so we don't know. All of the context makes it clear on all of them, except and because he was small in stature. So if Jesus was small in stature, Zacchaeus would not be able to see him in the crowd.
Which makes sense.
And it makes total sense. If Zacchaeus was small in nature, he would not be able to see Jesus in the crowd. That also makes sense. Now, almost everybody commentaries accept that, of course, because of the way this story is told, it sure seems clear that the person whose stature matters in this story seems to be Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is the, we don't get any other references to people being like, but people never could see him because he was so short.
Right. No one ever,
references that Jesus anywhere else.
That's why and he had to teach up on a mountain.
Exactly. That's why he always got in front of a crowd on the mountain. Now, I have no idea where Jordan came up with bald. That's nowhere in the story. Like, there is no reference to Zacchaeus being bald anywhere that I can find.
It sounds like the pastor he was listening to said that.
Yeah, maybe so. It would be wild to me. If there is a reference to Zacchaeus being bald, I can't find it anywhere. Again, maybe it's in the Greek hidden somewhere that I can't see, but
so funny.
I am unaware of Zacchaeus being described as bald, but I would tend to lean with the, what I assume to be the vast majority, which is, I think probably it was Zacchaeus that was short in this, that's being described as short in this passage. But it is not impossible by any means that Jesus is the one who is short in this passage. So there you go. There's your Danny DeVito as Jesus the Christ. Now, the main problem with Danny DeVito is the same problem I would have portraying Jesus, is I would have to lose 40 pounds.
Right.
As if I walked 25 miles a day, every
it's
day
genetic,
of my life.
Chris.
I would be thinner if I walked 25 miles a day. Like, I don't care what my Scottish genes are. That would be a, so yeah, you do have to portray him. I think it's only right to portray all of them as being not, maybe not malnourished, but certainly
probably worked, on the cusp,
worked hard. They burn a lot of calories probably most days, and they probably don't,
I was going to say,
many more than
not,
that.
They're not getting a ton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
and they probably were carrying their stuff everywhere. Not that everywhere. They had a lot of stuff, but
yeah.
That's, but you so
should, yeah, we should picture them. That'd be the only, I think we can assume they all had, they all looked like people who took, you know, what is our goal? 7,000 or 10,000 steps a day on our phones,
yeah.
Which is what, 2 miles, something like 2 miles, and the 10 times that most a days day. Probably. And so, so they look probably as fit as we would if we walked that many miles a day. That's a, I think I've had 2 or 3 days like that in my entire life, unless I was hiking. And so, and even hiking, I don't go 20 miles in a day hiking, nowhere like, so, I think the closest I've ever come to that is probably when we were in Disney World. That's probably the closest I've come to 20 miles. And I think we were like 12 or 14 miles a day when we were there. So yeah, if I walked that way every day, whew, I would be in shape. Anyway, I don't think we have
I did some, I've done hiking both times I was pregnant, just full circle to the beginning of our conversation, just like, you know, throwing that out there.
Okay. Okay, good.
Good to know.
I love Colson's. Okay, no, but I did want to do a summary really quick.
Okay, let's do a summary.
So just to kind of summarize everything we've talked about, we will never know why God put Jesus in the time that he did. I think that's going to be a fascinating question, if mm-hmm. God will answer that for us in heaven.
Yeah.
Of why did Jesus come to the earth when he did? Which I think that would be, that would be cool to flesh out later. But mm-hmm. I think it is a mercy that we don't know what Jesus looks like because of our tendency to idolize and hyper focus on physical appearance. And if anything, culture very much shapes what we are attracted to. That's like something we didn't talk about, but even for those of us who've like traveled to different places, what is found attractive is different depending on where you are. And so, yeah, I just think it's a mercy that we get to worship Jesus for who he is and his character and not what he looks like. And so that we can't create, you know, the looks like Jesus club.
Yeah.
But also then we have to be careful not to then go and make him in our image, like you're saying, of when I paint Jesus, I'm going to paint him what I feel like is attractive because, you know, and that kind of self or ethnocentricity or whatever you want to say. But yeah, I think that's a great question. Did y'all have any other thoughts?
I don't. I think that summarizes it well. I agree. I love the idea of saying it is a mercy that we don't know, because what we would probably do with that is great. And that came up in the Shroud of Turin conversation, mm-hmm. I think probably where this came from. So, yep. Very, very good. Thank you. Good stuff, guys. That's really fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Reconstructed Faith. If you enjoyed what you heard or were challenged, please leave us a review. It'll help other people find us. If you have questions or a topic you'd like to hear discussed, shoot me an email at info@southspring.org. Reconstructed Faith is a resource of South Spring Baptist Church. Remember, don't give up, trust God, search for answers.